She told me before it came out, she said, I got all these text messages. She said, go back and tell your client that if he resigned, I won't charge him with 12 felonies. I said, 12 felonies? She said, yeah. She said, this is how much shit that I got on him.
Joining us this morning is Mike Morse and Detroit's Top Dirty. Mike Morse is in here to tell us about the backpack giveaway here.
Adapt and change things up a little bit every year.
Hi, this is Mike Morse. Welcome to Open Mic. I'm here with Kevin Dietz and Adolf Mongo, who's a political consultant who's worked for everybody from Coleman Young to Kwame Kilpatrick. He's consulted with Coleman Young Jr.'s campaign when he ran against Mayor Duggan. We're going to talk about Kid Rock and founders and lots of stuff in between. So stay tuned for a great episode.
All right, so Adolf Mongo has been in the middle of everything that is anything for 3-4 decades, and it all started back with Coleman Young. Why don't you tell us? I mean, Coleman Young was one of the most controversial figures ever in Metro Detroit. Why don't you tell us kind of what you did and how you got into the inside inner circle with Coleman Young?
You know, he got me my first newspaper job. He didn't know it. I moved to Colorado Springs. And right out of college, went to one of the newspapers, Colorado Springs Sun, which is no longer in business, and applied for a job as a copy aide. And I put down as a reference Coleman Young.
Oh. And did you know him, or was that bullshit?
No, it was bullshit.
What is it like that?
Wait a minute. The guy that interviewed me, I didn't know that he was a graduate of Michigan State. 1950, 1951, he was a copy editor. So he said, you know Coleman Young? I said, yeah. He said, oh, man. He said, you went to U of M? He said, don't let anybody tell you that a Michigan State grad is not going to do anything positive for a U of M person. So he hired me as a copy editor.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's a good story.
He said, Coleman Young, he said, that's a bad dude. Yeah.
What year was this?
77.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, he got me my first
And then you eventually worked for him for real.
Yeah.
So how'd that come about?
Oh, I was a newspaper reporter out of Kalamazoo, and they had a conference, association for black journalists at the Old Book Cadillac. I came down from the newspaper. He was doing a press conference, and I raised my hand to ask a question. I said, Mr. Mayor, you got a nice haircut there. Who cut your hair?
Come on.
He said,
that was your question, your first question?
That was my first question. He said, what's your name? I said, Adolf Mongo. He said, are you Diane's brother-in-law? I said, yeah, that's his barber. My sister-in-law.
Backstory.
Where are you coming from? I said, from Kalamazoo. He said, why are you not working in Detroit? I said, you got a job for me? He said, pulled his car.
This is in front of everybody, front of the whole audience?
Everybody looking at me like, why does he ask the question?
I like your style already.
He said, call my secretary, Bernice. So I called her. They sent me a letter saying, you know, there's no jobs, et cetera. But about a month later, I get a call, said, the mayor wants to meet you. Can you? And I happened to be in Detroit. I said, well, I need to go and change clothes. They said, no, come as you are. Went over to Cobo. They had a championship fight. Tommy Hearns was, they were all in tux. I was in jeans and tennis shoes. And he introduced me as his new deputy director of public information. Was the interview.
That is awesome.
That's how I became part of the Coleman Young administration. I was his spokesperson, one of several.
So now kind of switched roles. Instead of being a reporter, now you're kind of keeping the reporters away. How did that work in the Coleman Young administration?
A lot of bullshit, you know.
I don't think I ever met Mayor Young. What kind of? How would you describe him for those of us who never met him?
Oh, listen, straight up, his word was, you know what? If he said he was with you, he was loyal to a fault. He looked out for the people that worked for him. And he hated to fire people. If he was going to get rid of you, he found something someplace else. Because he said people have families and stuff. And he talked about the time when he was blacklisted, couldn't find a job, and people helped him out. The guy was a great guy. He dealt with a lot of folks, Republicans, Democrats, you name it. He could go and cut deals. He was the best thing to happen to the city.
Was he?
Yes. Kept it from sinking. I'm telling you. You know, and people liked him. You know, they say John Engler. Him and John Engler had a great relationship. He didn't have a good relationship with the Democratic Party. He had a great relationship with people like Governor Milligan, and Republicans did more to help the city than the Democrats did when doing Coleman Young.
Were you still around him when he was going to get in the ring with Bill Bonds, the famous news anchor, and box him?
You know what? A lot of that was hype. they respected each other. But then sometimes, you know, Bill was, you know, drinking and doing the news at the same time. But they had a good relationship. There's no question. They respected each other. They might not agree with each other. Pete Wallmeyer, another one. You know, it's like there was a reception where Bill Bonds and Pete Wallmeyer was there, and Coleman was speaking. And he got up there and he saw both of them. He said, I must be in hell because I got Bill Bonds and Pete Wallmeyer here. You know, it was like, but that was Coleman. Coleman was one of the best mayors that I have seen in my lifetime.
And you say that people really got it wrong when they talk about the 8 Mile comment. What was really going on?
He was telling the criminals to hit the road, right, not to go across 8 Mile Road to Oakland County, whatever. Brooks Patterson knew how to play the political game. Brooks Patterson, the several mayors and Warren and Macomb County, they used Coleman Young to further their political careers. It worked, and Coleman did the same thing here in Detroit. And we're not giving up our guns unless the militia give up their guns. So it was tit for tat.
You know, I'm looking at your bio here. You next worked with Mayor Kilpatrick. Is that true?
Reluctantly, yes. I didn't support him when he first ran.
You got him elected, though.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to lie your way into a job with him. He came after you?
He came after me, called me. It was about 3 o'clock one morning, and my phone rang, one of those little flip phones, and my wife grabbed it. I guess she thought somebody was calling me. Anyway, she said, it's the mayor. I take the phone. Three in the morning. He was somewhere because I can hear the music.
He was having a party at the Manoogian Mansion?
Listen. He obviously he's been drinking. He said, Dolph, I need you. I said, need me for what? I need you. I need your help. I said, well, let's talk in the morning. He called me back.
He was losing the campaign at this time, right?
Yes, he was losing
it. To Freeman Hendricks.
So I said, nah.
His first run.
Second run?
Okay.
Second run. I didn't support him first run. So he called me for about a week and a half. So he said, I said, okay. My wife said, you don't want to get involved with them. I said, well, he's making it real hard not to, you know.
Is he offering some good money?
Oh, yeah. That's no
and
question.
What did he want you to do for him? What was his? What was the
what
offering?
What did I do? Yeah, he want me to blow up some folks.
So blow up some folks. Okay. Yeah. Well,
anyway.
Tell me about that.
So he invited me to meet him at the Manoogian, and I said, no, I'll come to your office. So I come to his office because all the people that saw me there, oh, man, they hated my guts, you know, because I beat up on him when he first got elected. Going there, and Christine was there. I said, man, Christine, why don't you just cool out? Yeah, I said, cool out. Y'all won. Yeah, so no need to be mad at me. She leaves. He pulls a check out and says, I need you. I need you. You can do whatever. It's fine. But they never used me. I put an ad together. They never used it until they got this results of a poll. Now they done lost the primary by 12 points, and the poll said that Freeman Hendricks is gonna beat him by maybe 18 to 20 points, And he had people jumping ship, Conrad Mallett. All these people was resigning. I'm like, Mr. Mayor, I got something. I have something.
Tell me
he called me one night that 2-3 o'clock in the morning. He said, do what you do. I said, okay.
So tell me about the ad you came up with.
Oh, the first draft of the ad was three people burned up on a bonfire, 1,000 people, you know, cheering, basically. And then I had 12 journalists saying this is the lynch mob in Detroit. I used the high-tech lynching, Kwame, et cetera. And then my wife looked at that and said, you can't use that. Nobody's going to run that. So I changed the picture a little bit, put three people being lynched hanging off some trees. Then I just changed it to four or five journalists. One was Mildred Gaddis.
Was it?
Yeah.
He essentially was saying that the media was lynching the mayor by giving unfair press, but using a graphic picture of.
We said we're gonna pay for it in the black newspapers, Citizen, Michigan Citizen, and the Chronicle. And you know what? We paid for it. The Citizen ran it, didn't get any feedback. So I go to the late Sam Logan at the Chronicle, said, give me the money back, because we can't, it's not going to do anything. He said, just wait. Rosa Parks died. He said, we're doing a special issue on Rosa Parks. I'm going to put the ad on the back of this supplement. I said, okay. Put it on the back of the supplement. Sold out 100,000 copies. It went worldwide.
So all the other media picked up the story.
Yeah, the Detroit News ran the whole ad.
Well, I just Googled it, and it's lynching ad has many wondering who's behind it. Ad depicting lynching faulted in Detroit race. The Boston Globe picked it up. I mean, he didn't
admit to it until like 20 years later, 15 years later?
Well, no, we did 2012.
The story. Yeah. That's when I did the story.
Click on Detroit. Yeah. Is that your story?
Yeah, that's my story, yeah.
Lynching ad being used in federal investigation into Kilpatrick. He begged you? Kevin begged you?
No, Kwame begged me not to admit to it.
He didn't want to be associated with it.
Right.
Oh, look at this. Kevin Dietz. I just pulled it up right there.
I was on Flashpoint, and Devin Skillian said, did you do the ad? I said, Devin, you know if I did the ad, I would tell you.
Oh, so you lied to Devin?
I lied to everybody.
I love it. It says, your quote from that day, people say they don't like negative ads. That's bullshit. They love it. That's what your quote was.
Yeah, they do.
Was this you back in the day right here? Without facial hair?
Yeah, look at a young man. Yeah.
I don't know if I can get this on camera.
They do love it.
The ad
turned around the campaign. That's no question.
No, this is the ad right there.
That's the ad. So it wasn't, part of it.
It was
lynching still legal.
It
in
wasn't
America.
A commercial. It was just a printed ad. Newspaper ad.
It was a newspaper ad, and if I'm gonna tell you, the newspaper ad, we couldn't even pay for that kind of press.
But tell me why you think this ad won him his second term.
Because, you know what, people thought that he got a raw deal the way they was beating him up. One of the columnists that was from the Free Press wrote an article about how Kilpatrick and Fidel Castro was similar. And I'm like, Fidel Castro put people in jail, killed political opponents. How can you compare somebody like him to Castro? Those kind of things. I just pulled them all out and said, you know what? They beating him up because he's this young, tall, imposing black man who they don't like, you know? And he's cocky, you know, has come from a family of, you know, his mama in Congress. His father was one of McNamara's henchmen, used to be a county commissioner. So, you know, they had all the cousins, friends, all up, you know, this was their time to build their own political machine.
But you helped him get reelected, but then look what happened. So how do you put?
Well, if he'd have listened, he wouldn't be serving 28 years.
So what do you think went wrong there?
Well, the first thing that went wrong was, what's her name? Kim Worthy used to be one of my clients. Right. I ran her campaign when she ran for prosecutor. We had a meeting because she was running for re-election, and she wanted me. We fell out because of Kilpatrick. She didn't like him. He didn't like her. And she says, well, you can't be my consultant if you keep working with the mayor. I said, well, unless you're going to pay me double, because you can't tell me what clients. It had nothing to do with you. But anyway, we was trying to rebuild our relationship. That's when the text messages broke. She told me before it came out. She said, I got all these text messages. She said, go back and tell your client that if he resigned, I won't charge him with 12 felonies. I said, 12 felonies? She said, yeah. She said, this is how much shit that I got on him. I go back, meet with the mayor, him and Christine. I said, you know what? He already knew. She said, resign. I said, this is a good deal. You can run for mayor again. You know what he told me? My people are talking to her people. I said, I just met with the prosecutor. So what people are you talking about? Wow. Unless you can, you talking to the prosecutor? I just met with Kim Worthy at Mario's. We just had lunch yesterday. That's why I asked to see you. He said, nope.
Boy, do I think he wishes he took your advice all those years ago.
Well, wow. He'd be home.
He'd be in Dallas with his family.
He had several opportunities. Not only with Kim Worthy, but with the feds and everybody else. And you know, the guy, he listened, then he didn't listen.
Does he have a massive ego?
Daddy was his albatross. He had all these people.
Oh, Daddy was pulling the strings?
Daddy pulling the strings. He didn't listen to his mother. You know, she was going to be collateral damage. You know, just a sad situation.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next mayor. Our current mayor, Mayor Duggan.
I ran his campaign for prosecutor.
Well, I was going to say, do you have any relationship there? All right. So that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
What year was that when he was prosecutor?
Oh, when he was prosecutor, when did it
come? About 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was going to say 20.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you ran his first campaign?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll go back when he was the deputy county exec. And I didn't know Duggan. I knew who he was.
For McNamara.
Yes. I just happened to be on a radio show. And they asked me, they said, what do you think of McNamara and his campaign against Sharon McPhail? I said, how would you run it if you was running Sharon McPhail campaign? I said, well, McNamara done an all right job as county exec, but I wouldn't even run against him on the job he's doing at a county exec. I will run against his 16-year tenure as the mayor of the whitest city in America, that's Livonia, and his neo-Nazi police force. I get a call the next day, it's Duggan and Mike and Dave Katz. Duggan want to meet with you. I said, for what? About the election. I said, I'm not involved in the election. I'm not running anybody election. So they want to hire me as a consultant for some other program.
They'd like him not to say what he was saying.
But anyway, that's how I got involved with them. And when he ran for prosecutor against Virgil Smith Sr. And Sharon McPhail, he was losing. But I pulled out the magic bag of tricks.
What was that one? Tell me that one.
Well, they was beating up on Greg Mathis, who just became one of those TV judges.
Yeah, sure.
Sharon McPhail was calling him a gangbanger, et cetera. And
he had a criminal history that he fully acknowledged. Yeah. It was part of his show.
So I wrote all these commercials. Duggan thought he was going to lose. But Duggan is very sensitive when it comes to elections. He assumed the worst. That's why, you know, he plays hard.
So what was the magic commercial you came up with for him?
Well, we threw McPhail under the bus. The bottom line is Greg Mathis turned himself around. if you don't give a person like him an opportunity to redeem themselves, what about the ones that didn't go to college, the ones that's out there in the street right now? Yeah, we beat our ass.
Are you still friendly with the mayor?
Man, we're not drinking buddies.
When was the last time you saw him socially?
I think you were at that Benny Napoleon, something at Mario's. Everybody was at Mario's.
I like Mario's. Who doesn't like Mario's? So let's talk about what's happening with the mayor these days. I would like your feedback and your opinion on this whole Make Your Date investigation and this Bob Carmack situation and everything that's going on with this Inspector General report. I want your take.
And the public relations decisions along the way, but right?
It's all about, listen, I lived through that. When I was with Coleman Young, we lived through the limousine, Joyce Garrett, who was his girlfriend, working for him at one time. All these things that Duggan is going through, it's like Groundhog Day is being repeated, you know?
Well, Mayor Young got through it. It doesn't. Yes. I don't feel like Mayor Duggan's getting through it. Did I say Mayor Duggan twice?
Yeah.
I said, sorry. Mayor.
You're right.
I said it right. Mayor Young seemed like he weathered it okay. And I'm struggling watching Mayor Duggan deny these things. I watched him on Channel 4 this weekend. I'm wondering about his strategy. And I just,
the mistake, the difference between Coleman Young and Mayor Duggan at this point is, Duggan went divorce. He got a family. The Mayor Young family was the city. That's, you know what, he didn't have any kids. He didn't have a wife,
okay,
et cetera. That's how he dealt with it. Two, he had real political people around him, Coleman Young. What Alexis Riley did with the emails, if she had any sense, she would resign and leave and go and work someplace else. So he has a neophyte as his chief of staff, and she doesn't have a clue of how she's hurting him.
Why do you say she should have to resign?
She should.
He said he was going to retrain her.
Well, how can you retrain somebody? You never know why she did it, but she has no credibility when it comes to dealing with the city council. You see, the city council jumped on this, and they're going to continue to jump on it.
How did the city council jump on this?
They want her punished.
Just today, they said.
I've been.
Yeah, no, it's just happening. Busy. No, it's just tell happening. So the city council came out and said the inspector general said that these people need to be punished properly.
They need to show
that this is unacceptable.
They need to be fired.
And that retraining is not the answer.
They need to be fired. There's no question.
And now, Ellen Haas, she came back Sunday after Duggan had said, all we're going to do is retrain. She came back and said, that is not an appropriate response. So, which she wrote a letter to the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press saying that more needed to be done. Otherwise, there was no reason for them to do these reports if they didn't mean anything.
Well, you know, when you said Mayor Young got through all this, but when you're working with somebody, when they built the new Jefferson plant, it's not the new Jefferson plant anymore, and when they was acquiring land, the city bought a old warehouse for $40 million, and it was junk that was inside of it. And it was mob related, the people that owned it. I can name all the things that Mayor Duggan is going through, and I can look at, you go back. How do you survive it? You get out in front of it, and you deal with it.
And how does city council now add to the story or change the story? How's this going to play out? Because this goes back to the very beginning when Bob Carmack was running around with the signs. The very first thing he said was,
"Well, this is a different day and a different time when you got social media and you didn't have all that back in the 80s and early 90s to follow it, and you had real journalists back then, so you.
But that's more. That's probably more reason to get out in front of it than ever, though, because you can't. You're not just dealing with what is the newspaper going
to
say.
But I'm trying to figure out who his spokespersons are. You know, you got to have somebody that's able to go out and spin. You got to have some spin doctors, and at this point, I haven't seen any.
You think they're afraid of him, or they just are?
No, I don't think. Listen, Duggan easy to work with. It's smart. Listen, he's smart. you know, I had my issues with him. There's no question about it. But that's all politics.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think Detroiters are thinking about this? Do they think, I mean, first
they
of all.
They voted him in a second term, and I was the fierce opposition, even though I figured that the client that I was representing wasn't going to win.
But Adolf, somebody, just so you know, Adolf had Coleman Young Jr. Running against Doug.
Things didn't change much in that.
Well, the only reason is he came and asked me, and you know, I owe this old man a debt. So you know what? I went and I ran his campaign. But I'm glad I did, because you know, you just can't crown somebody king without opposition. You got to make them talk about the issues in the city, and I think Coleman Young, he did that.
Is the mayor going to run a third term?
I don't know. But I think what the mayor's problem is that people expect miracles. They want everything. You know, you look at downtown and say, oh, damn, you know, just 5 years ago, you didn't have this, you didn't have that. But it was like a perfect storm. You had a lot of people want to get a lot of things done. You had all these billionaires. They're all part of less the stadiums. You know, we bringing in people, et cetera. But now the people that's out in the community, they want that same kind of magic. Nobody can perform that magic. It's going to take a minute. And you know, Coleman Young got beat up the same way, saying, oh, you concentrating on downtown. You're not doing anything in the neighborhoods. I've been hearing that for 40 years.
But, you know, with Kwame, when it went down with Christine Beattie, he went to the church and he sat with his wife and he apologized and he broke it off with Christine Beattie. Yeah. And he said, we're going back to being about the business of the city. And he was allowed to do that. I mean, the people said, okay, you apologized and we forgive you, basically. And he continued on. But we're not getting any of that. We're getting, I don't talk about my personal life. We're getting, I don't have any preferential treatment. I disagree with all the findings.
You don't have, and when Kwame was doing that, and Coleman Young too, you had a media that forced his hand. They forced Coleman's hand. They forced Kwame's hand. And right now you don't have that. You don't have that. He said, all the people I talked to saying, oh, that's a personal situation. I said, well, personal or not, he's the mayor of Detroit, and you know, he should be able to answer those questions that people throw out there.
Saying I don't talk about it wasn't enough for Kilpatrick and wasn't enough for Coleman, but so far it seems enough for Mayor Duggan.
Yeah, well, you know, he's getting beat up. I mean, big time.
Do you think he's going to reverse course and listen to city council and put?
Nobody listens to city council. You know, listen, city council, the worst thing that ever happened to city council is when they did districts. And you know, so you don't.
The worst thing or the best thing?
The worst thing.
Why don't you want them representing an area they live?
Because they don't do anything. You know, they build up these little kingdoms over there.
But before, it was just like a popular vote. It was just like...
It should still be a popular vote, because some of these people shouldn't even be on council. They couldn't get elected if they wasn't in a little district. We got districts already. We got the county commissioner. What do they do? Tell me nothing. What are our state reps up in Lansing? What do they do? Not one damn thing. Districts.
You didn't feel like when it was an open forum that just all the people who lived in Palmer Park or lived in certain places got all the attention and the people out in the neighborhoods got screwed.
Right, they still the same. What has changed? What has changed? Nothing.
Adolf, you mentioned earlier the condition of downtown Detroit, and I got to be honest, the downtown area is pretty spectacular for a guy who went to law school in Detroit with all the new restaurants and shops. And, you know, sometimes I don't know who to give credit to for doing it. Is the mayor? Is it someone like Dan Gilbert? Because it's pretty fun down there now, and it's amazingly different than it was growing up.
It could have been that way 40 years ago if the Henry Fords and the Al Todmans and the Fishers, et cetera, would have said, you know what, we want to invest in downtown. Instead, Ford built all this stuff out in Dearborn, new hotels, et cetera. Taubman built malls, saying that, you know, there's no money, there's no customers in Detroit. So their kids and grandkids say, you know what, we want Detroit to be like it was when my father grew up or my mother, et cetera. So they put their money where their mouth. You know,
in the 40s, Detroit was crazy. Right, yes. It was the spot, right?
And then my parents, you know, talk about it all the time. I went away to school
and was gone for 10 years. And when I came back, I said, what happened to downtown? It was gone.
So
Illiches were still around though, right? Was that just not
enough? Illiches came, they was going to tear down, the city was going to tear down the Fox, make it a parking lot. And Mike Illich said, you know what, we're going to move Little Caesars headquarters from Farmington Hills to Detroit, and we're going to redo the Fox. Shit, Chuck Forbes is the one. If it wasn't for Chuck Forbes, I don't know if he's still alive. He saved the Palm Theater, the Fox, and all the gym, all these places they were going to tear down. Detroit is notorious for tearing down these buildings that you can't even pay to rebuild. Right.
So good for Mike Illich for being the visionary to save the Fox.
I say that was a combination of Coleman Young. It was Coleman Young had the visionary to say, you know, when Bruce Norris said we moving the Red Wings to Auburn Hills, signed the papers to move the team, to build a new stadium, and Coleman Young took a little bit of money, dug a hole up there by Cobo and built Joe Louis Arena, and he got Michigan National Bank to renege on the loan to the Red Wings.
I don't think I remember that story that the Red Wings were supposed to move to Auburn Hills. Yes. Do you remember that?
They had to pay them.
I don't remember that.
The city had to pay them. This is the late 70s, and the city had to pay them. And then Coleman helped broker the deal where Bruce Norris loaned Illich part of the money to buy the Red Wings.
That was right when Illich bought the team. Yes. Because they were
still
playing.
Was it $11 million or $12 million?
That's all he bought it for?
That's basically.
Wow.
Yeah, give a few million.
So you appreciate people investing in Detroit. So you're a fan of the Dan Gilberts of the world?
You know what? Not that. Sometimes they get carried away. It's like $400-500 million that should have went someplace to schools, and you give it to Dan Gilbert. You know, they need to spend some of their own money too. You know,
the Illiches got some tax breaks too, didn't they?
Yeah,
everybody gets
tax breaks. And then he didn't even ask for them.
Give Tom Gore $35 million. Guess what he gives back to the community? A damn basketball court. Who cares?
Right.
And do something. Do something constructive.
That guy feels like he should be doing more.
Yes.
I don't know much about that, but he just feels like I don't see him much.
So you feel like it's great that the city has what it has, and it's great.
But they need to link up the neighborhoods. We got a lot of people that want to be part of the Renaissance and not just look and say, oh, you know, right. we giving you a rent break if you move to the city and you working at a certain company and you can get a half off of moving here, et cetera.
Right. That's the billion-dollar question, because when you do veer off Woodward and go through a neighborhood to get to the highway, you can see there's still a ton of blight. There's still a ton of houses that.
And you ask, how can these people survive when the police scared to go there? Right. When the EMS won't go there unless they have a police escort.
Right. Most people in the suburbs have only seen about 5% of the city of Detroit. Right. It's a very small, it's only a few miles.
Right. I've seen all
here's somebody own their house for 40, 50 years, and they living next door to two houses that's burned up. You never know how many bodies inside. Right. Yeah.
So there's a ways to go. There's a ways to go.
This Renaissance should include everybody. It should, you know, not just the chosen few.
I agree with you 100%. So let's switch gears. Let's talk about Kid Rock. So
bigot, racist. You know what? And when they NAACP said, "Well, let's give Kid Rock an award for being a good corporate citizen." Kid Rock wear that American flag is like somebody, say a black rocker wearing a Nazi flag and flying it during a concert. How many Jews will get upset? The ones that I know, they probably make sure he never play another arena around the country. Kid Rock knew what he was doing, saying it's Southern pride. That flag caused a lot of people to die, and it stands for hate and bigotry, racism, etc.
What did you do about it?
Well, you know, we went and we protested at the NAACP. Reverend Wendell Anthony said, oh, Kid Rock has a black child. Yeah, all the slave masters had black kids, too. That's why black people are different kind of colors, brown, yellow, etc. Because they had black mistresses and stuff. So, yeah, they didn't handle it right. And Kid Rock, I see he stopped flying the flag and he stopped wearing it on his back.
So this whole flag controversy, which I do remember in the news, are you taking credit for bringing that all up all into light?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Nobody else.
I watched you write the press release.
Right. Wow. Nobody else would say anything. There's no question.
What happened though? How did that roll? Did they end up not letting him be at that event, or was he at the event and you just protested?
We protested, but they gave him an award. He brought his little son with him, and you know, he gave the NAACP, bought him off, gave him $10,000 or $20,000 or whatever. He just bought him off. But you know what? The bottom line is, I was at back in the 80s, me and my wife was at the Drake Hotel in Chicago. They had a little jazz bar down in the Drake. And the piano guy playing jazz. And then all of a sudden, this group of white folks came in. Next thing I know, they was playing Dixie. I'm like, playing Dixie? I went berserk. You know, they stopped. And they went and got the manager of the hotel. She came. She had a little thick accent. I said, where you from? She said, why do that matter? I said, it sounds like you from Eastern Europe somewhere. She said, yeah, Poland. I said, did you have anybody in your family that died during World War II? She said, yeah. I said, so if they were playing pro-Nazi songs on their piano, what would you do? She said, I'd be offended. I said, you know, there's no question. So, you know what? I hear that, and some people might say, well, they playing Dixie, it don't bother me. It does. I grew up by my family from South Carolina, mother and father side. So I know what those kind of things can do to black folks like me.
So can I ask a naive question?
Go ahead.
I think I've heard Dixie music, and I didn't know that was a racist thing.
Yeah, it's racist.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And you you wouldn't have a little Confederate pin on you.
I don't. Okay. Okay. But I
went to school with predominantly Jewish junior high and high school, and I know better than the...
Where'd you go?
I went to Oak Park when it was 95% Jewish.
What year did you graduate?
72.
So my dad graduated from Oak Park High School, but I think it was in the 60s.
Okay.
He passed a while ago. Joel Morse is my dad's name, but he was a lawyer by 69, 70, so he's probably a little older than
older than my brothers who went to Oak Park.
But it's interesting. I don't know if I knew that was 95% Jewish back then in the 60s. Yes. Interesting, in 70s.
Yeah, so I understand, you know, what to do and not to do to offend folks. You know, I'm not going to be walking around with a Nazi emblem and say, oh, that's German pride. They look at me like I'm crazy.
All right. Well, I learned something. I'm not going to be listening to much Dixie music. Not that I do anyway. So let's talk about Founders Beer, which is one of my favorite beers. I'm sad watching them go through what they're going through. What is your take on all this?
Stupidity. They could have just settled that and kept going. Now, one thing I learned from Coleman Young, settle. Don't go to court. Don't.
Well, you're talking to a lawyer here, so right? I understand.
Settle. Listen, Kwame's in jail because... They were so determined to break Gary Brown. They didn't want him to have his pension. They didn't want him to retire with a higher rank. All they had to do was settle, pay him off. That's what Founders needed to do was pay the guy, tell him to go away, and then spend it. What they worried about is The guy, they leaked the deposition. I don't know if Obama's black. I don't know if this guy is black. I'm thinking the general manager is blind.
You know what? That would be a good defense. I'm blind. I can't see.
And then the diversity director, she came out on that letter that she put on Facebook or something.
I'm like, oh my
God. She's looking for some bucks.
Everybody looking for some bucks. And you know how much money they losing?
A lot.
I'm not even in the beer business, and I know that they losing a ton of money. Everybody in turn on them.
But come on, the guy who filed the lawsuit, there's something to be said for him not taking a payoff and trying to make some change. If the things he alleges are true, that's not a good work environment.
Well, and no question, and they calling you all kind of names. And you still working there? Shit, in my day, you know, I've been waiting outside with a 2x4. And they wouldn't call me any other names after that. But, hey, but, you know, people, you know, do what they got to do. If you got to.
But it's that, it's that pride, though, he was talking about. You know, Kwame could have settled his deal for such a small amount of money in the beginning, but he had so much pride he wouldn't do it. It toppled everything. Founders is kind of doing that, too. Right. It's like, we don't need to worry about this. This is just nothing. We're a big company, you know?
Right. Gary Brown came to me. We were in the Marine Corps together. And Gary Brown came to me saying, man, you know what? I'm starving, basically. You know, can you talk to the mayor? Listen, several people talked to the mayor. Said, man, y'all need to just settle it. Don't go to court. Don't go on.
Right.
Man, but he did.
Bad decisions.
Bad decisions.
Well, I hope founders can find their way out of this and make some changes and make some apologies settle.
They should have called me. I could have gave them.
They could have called either of you guys.
Right.
I could have got them out of
there. Gotten this.
Wait a minute. I
work for beer. I work for beer, all right?
I don't want beer.
I like the all day IPA.
Works for cash.
Yeah. I don't want the beer. But they could. Listen, they still can get out of this.
Yeah. I don't think this is going to, in my personal opinion, I don't think this is going to end this company by any stretch.
Well, they just hired two new PR companies. So if they ought to be able to tell them to make changes where they need to be changed and apologize and move forward and stop the nonsense.
Get rid of the general manager. Get rid of the people that was calling folks nigger. Get rid of them and then move forward and pay the guy.
What about retraining?
Retraining. Yeah, right.
Back to retraining.
That was a waste of money.
Right.
How you retrain somebody? You know, you grow up with these biases and stuff, but that don't mean that you got to act on it. You know, you can work with a whole lot of folks, and you might not like them, but that's all part of making a living.
Right. A lot of stupidity going on here. I don't know who's advising people to say that they don't know that these people are black or white or whatever they're saying. It's just not smart.
And I find out all these other companies, they happy that this unhappened to them. They all joining in. Let's.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we not going to take that beer, right. You know.
Right.
A lot of people are listening to their lawyers, too, on that front. And they're saying, well, don't say anything that you don't know to be a fact. And like.
Apologize.
The Michigan State president. They're now going to go to trial with her apparently not being forthright to investigators. I'm sure that some lawyer said, you know what, we don't want to say anything. We don't want to say anything wrong, so don't say anything.
Right.
And now here's
in the law, there's a whole thing about apologizing. Okay, if you show if you apologize, you're basically admitting guilt. And there's a whole controversy whether or not you should apologize. And that's with regards to medical malpractice. If a doctor makes a mistake, should they go in and apologize or should they not say anything? It sounds like a lot of that is still going on here with the founders thing. They could have easily just, you know, said that they were sorry early on and done the right thing. I think a good PR company would have told them to do so. And you could take that, I'm sorry to other things that we've talked about today with the mayors and other things like that. Sometimes you just gotta fall on your sword.
I know a lot of attorneys say, oh, no, don't say anything. You know what? Don't talk to the press, et cetera. I'm just the opposite on a lot of stuff and say, you need to get in front of this. They beating your ass every day and you're not saying anything.
Right.
The court of public opinion. Sometimes you don't say anything, but there are times where you got to come out and you got to start swinging. And if you don't, you find yourself behind the eight ball.
And on that note, Adolf Mongo, thank you so much for coming to our podcast. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, and I hope you come back one day.
Yeah, Yeah, I like your setup.
Thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure. I learned a ton.
Thank you for having me, Kevin. That's my guy right here.
Well, I look forward to having you back, on the show whenever you want to come. Just let us know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for watching Open Mic. Subscribe over here, watch all the videos, like them, share them, tell your friends, and please, please subscribe to our show and share it all. See you soon.